This is Joanne Spitzmiller, and I'm one of the documenters team with Hank Rogerson. And we're really excited to be bringing you this amazing person tonight, Richard Seitz. And we've known Richard for about 10 years. We first got funding from ITVS in 1999, and the first time we went up for the orientation to ITVS to meet everyone, Richard was actually moving into his offices there. So we kind of started at the same time with ITVS, although obviously we've had very different experiences. He's on the inside there, and we've been really fortunate to have a good deal of funding and a great relationship with all the people there. ITVS is located in San Francisco. So this is a teleseminar with Documenters, which we're a new online resource center for documentary filmmakers of all levels. And we have a monthly membership with many critical tools for filmmakers. Basically, Hank and I brainstormed what we needed when we were starting out and what we need every day to be competitive. And we're putting these together on this site at documentaryhowto.com to serve independent documentary filmmakers. And so we're really happy tonight to welcome Richard Seitz from ITVS. He's a senior programming manager at Independent Television Service, and he oversees the largest funding initiative that ITVS has, which is called Open Call. And everyone take note, because the deadline is nearing. It's January 15th of this new coming year, and we'll be talking all about that. But just a little more about Richard, he has over 30 years experience as a television journalist, producer, director, and writer in public and commercial broadcasting. So he has a real strong filmmaking background. He's even won a DuPont Columbia Silver Baton and Best Documentary, TV Documentary from San Francisco International Film Festival. So I think it's one of the great things about ITVS is that they really understand filmmakers, because a lot of them are filmmakers, and I really appreciate that about your organization.
Yes, and actually, I should add that I was turned down 3 times by ITVS, so I feel everybody's pain. I know what you go through, you know. So
yeah,
yes.
we're gonna talk tonight about how to sort of make your chances a little bit better, but maybe you could tell us a little bit about ITVS, sort of give us the basic scope of you guys and what you're doing these days.
We're doing a lot. It's breathtaking how much the organization has grown over the last, even just in the last 5 years. In fact, 5 years ago, we launched a major new initiative in which we received major funding from some big private foundations to launch an international initiative. So now we're global. As you know, most of our funding comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. We were created as part of the public media, public television family, about 20 years ago by no less than an act of Congress to support independent documentary makers as well as narrative filmmakers so that they can get their stories aired on public television. And since then, we have grown quite a bit. And now, 5 years ago with the launch of the international initiative, we now have a global reach in supporting filmmakers, not just in the United States, which is our main, a community to serve, but also international filmmakers. And so we've been able, through that international initiative, to bring some really stellar international programs to American audiences. So we're very excited about that. So we have that initiative, which is open only to international filmmakers. The rest are for so-called domestic American filmmakers. And as you pointed out, Open Call is the biggest one. It funds the most in terms of dollars, and it's the only one that happens twice a year, once in January and once in July. So it's a great opportunity for filmmakers, and also gives the largest amounts of money to filmmakers. And because of that, it is very competitive. But hopefully tonight, during our conversation, we'll be able to help filmmakers understand some very basic principles about understanding what it takes to be competitive and to increase your chances of getting greenlit by ITVS, at least through open call. The other initiatives are, you'll see them on your, so I don't want to repeat anything you can find on our website, which is really a great website. It'll answer 99.9% of your questions. The things we're going to talk about tonight hopefully will be things that you can't find on your website, things that I talk about to filmmakers when I go to festivals and conferences and give seminars and workshops about this. But we disperse about, on average per year, about $10 million to filmmakers here and throughout the world in support of documentary films. And we also have we're launching a new short narrative film series for the web called Future States, which you'll be hearing more about in the spring. So stay tuned, as they say. Or
that's
easy to say on TV.
Wonderful.
Yeah. So.
And if I may, Richard, just to speak to the quality of the films that ITVS funds. Recently at IDFA, the International Documentary Film Festival in Amsterdam, a ITVS film took home the top honors, The Last Train Home.
Yes. Isn't that exciting? Yeah.
Fantastic.
I know. And then also, we didn't do too shabbily on the domestic side. A Most Dangerous Man in America about Daniel Ellsberg
which
received some sort of honor, too, as I recall.
Right,
as I heard.
IDFA as well. And in addition, Sundance Film Festival recently, yesterday, announced its slate, and three films in the doc competition are ITVS-funded films,
yes,
as well as two films on the Oscar documentary shortlist.
On the shortlist, yeah, we're very excited.
So it just
I
tells
know.
You the kind of quality of films that come through ITVS.
Well, we all of us here feel very privileged to work with the incredible talent that's out there, and basically, without you, we're nothing. You know, ITVS is all about the programming, and the programming comes from the indie community, and so it's a privilege and it's exciting to work with many of these filmmakers, including both of you. We were just reminiscing about the old days, way back when, about 11 or so years ago, when you came through ITVS's open call.
Right.
Yes. So.
So let's just kick it off, I guess, with our discussion about funding projects. And How are projects selected for funding? I know that there's a set of criteria that you put out there and you ask for in your proposals. And
yes.
What does that criteria mean? And in general, how are a project selected?
One thing that people should understand about ITVS is that, you know, we're not a general sort of a funder of independent documentaries per se. We're interested in funding and supporting documentaries that serve the mission of ITVS, where, as they say, we're a mission-driven organization. And the mission of ITVS, as it was mandated by Congress, was to support the untold stories and diverse voices, diverse perspectives, diverse points of view. So the reason that ITVS was created was to augment and to supplement the types of programming that were standard and continue to be, you know, at the center of PBS programming that would have to do with culture and nature shows, and they're all wonderful, but it was felt that ITVS could bring in a very distinctive point of view and a distinctive way of distinctive style of storytelling by bringing in the independent community. And the independent community was the one that lobbied for the creation of ITVS. And so it's all about the mandate. And so the first thing that filmmakers who have not had that much experience in working with ITVS is to go to the website and to look at the mission statement, because that's the starting point. And after you've read it, then you can decide, is my project aligned with that mission? You know, and once, if you decide that it is, then you can go ahead and look at the guidelines. Now, I'll talk specifically about Open Call, but it is all basically the same with all the initiatives, and that is that fundamentally the process is a peer review process. That's how projects are vetted, which means that for the most part, when you submit your application, your proposal, and your work in progress video and all that for consideration, it is looked at first by the staff at ITVS, the programming department, and then if you make it through the first phase, then in the second phase, it's reviewed by three people from the outside, meaning your fellow filmmakers, public TV station programmers, sometimes a festival curator or an academic will weigh in. And then a fourth reader will look at it from the programming department, and in some cases the production department here at ITVS. If you make it past that phase, which is phase two, then and you make it to the finalists, which is about 30 projects, then seven people from around the country, and again, it's comprised of the same, you know, categories of filmmakers, etc., seven panelists will then review your project. They will meet here for 2 days. In fact, they're meeting next week. They're coming to town this Sunday. And to look at the videos, weigh in, discuss, cajole, pound the table, whatever, and then make their recommendations to ITVS about which ones they think should get the money. And so that's basically how it works. It's a really, it's quite a gauntlet. You know, you have to, you know, but we think that even though some people complain, oh, it takes forever, it's so cumbersome, but because we're a public media organization, we're not a private, you know, commercial entity, we have to be transparent, we have to be democratic. And this is, if somebody can tell me a faster, more streamlined way to do it and still fulfill, you know, the way that the best practices of an organization like ours, I would love to hear it. But that's how it works. So it takes about 4.5 months, basically.
Wow.
And then at that point too, I guess the finalists who are chosen after that phase three, I don't know if they're called finalists at that point, but they then come to San Francisco.
Yes. Yeah. Once the slate, the so-called green lit slate, is. You know, is approved by Sally Jo Pfeiffer, who's the president, because she has to have the final say, and she usually agrees with the recommendations of the panel and, you know, the programming department. Then that's those people on that slate are then called with the good news. And I can tell you, it's like, you know those commercials where they come in and you say, you just won the lot, you know, what is it, the sweepstakes, you know, and they come with that oversized check.
Yeah.
The reactions when you call people on the phone are amazing. One time I called a filmmaker, and I think she screamed for about 45 seconds. And I can understand it, because the great thing about ITVS and certainly Open Call is that you're essentially have to ask for all the money you need to finish the film. And as you know, the hardest and probably the most onerous aspect of being an indie is raising the money.
Yeah.
It's really, it's a very, very difficult process. So that's why many people turn to ITVS, because if they can get the Open Call funding, then for the most part, they're home clear. They don't have to worry about the money. They can just, you know, focus on being, you know, artists and making the film that they want to make. So when they hear that they've gotten greenlit, they're just, you know, ecstatic, and it's exciting.
I'll never forget our first call. Nandis Vals called and said, okay, we want you to stop fundraising and start creating.
Yes.
And I just, you know, about burst into tears.
Yeah, no, it's a great thing, you know. And I know what they're thinking, because up to that point, you know, you spend so much of your time trying to figure out how are you going to get the money to make this film. And there are many other sources, of course, for funding. But unless you can get, you know, a chunk of change from the Ford Foundation or the NEH or whatever, which is even more competitive and more difficult, unfortunately, one of the few games in town left is Open Call at ITVS for full funding. So it's a big deal. So that's why, you know, people are so happy to get the money, you know, to get the contract.
Go ahead.
Richard, can you just discuss what is your sort of funding range? Like, you know, a lot of people ask me, like, how much do they give? What's their top dollar, you know, talk about that a bit.
Yeah, well, you know, this is what basically the policy for Open Call is that we don't have a funding cap. In other words, if you need, $300,000 then you to finish your film, then when you come to ITVS, that's what you should ask for. We want you to be really honest and say exactly what it is that, you know, that you need. If you need, less than that or more than that, that's fine. But the reality is because of the way we work and because we're trying to sort of, so to speak, spread the wealth, it's very difficult for us to consider a single show that's pushing, you know, the $400,000, $500,000, you know, and upwards, because for obvious reasons, you know, it would just be difficult for us to do that. Nevertheless, so people say, well, why don't you just put a funding cap, you know? And the reason we do that is because we don't want people not, if they have a great idea, they have a great, you know, concept and it's a right fit for ITVS, we don't want them to, stop from going to ITVS because their budget is larger than you know, what it would usually fund in terms of the range, which usually can be anything from 200 upwards to 400. But because if you have a great idea, what's that? Yeah, 400K. Yeah.
So
we're talking in the K, you know,
the big leagues.
Yes. So what you want to do is say, okay, honestly, I need $600,000 to make this 90-minute, you know, this feature on, you know, whatever. And I know that ITVS probably can't come up with all of it. I have some pending funds from some different organizations and foundations. So I'm going to go ahead and apply. And then what happens, and if you're greenlit, then in the contract, which it is, it's a licensing agreement, which we can talk about a little bit, we tell you, well, this is how much we can fund. And in some cases, and this doesn't happen very often, you will be given an opportunity to fill the funding gap before the contract is finalized. In other words, we'll commit to a certain amount, but if you still need more money, then it's up to you to raise the rest. And there's usually a window of 6 months or 9 months to do that.
And chances
so,
are
yeah.
pretty good that the filmmaker will be able to find that money because of all the money that you've put into it. So.
Well, in some cases, you know, like they say, money follows money. I mean,
sure.
to get support from ITVS is a real, it's a sign that that the project is of high quality, because ITVS has, you know, as you pointed out, Hank, has a really good reputation. So if a foundation is sitting on the fence and they see that ITVS has funded it, it could make a difference. It's hard, you know, I can't promise that, but certainly, you know, in some cases, I think the NEH or one of those two will promise you a certain amount of money, but it's contingent on raising another, you know, so filmmakers try to work all fronts to try to get everything and all the money in place.
Right.
So, and for diverse filmmakers too, if any of your listeners, if you're diverse, you also have the opportunity to work with the minority consortia, which are the different, organizations also funded by CPB, which will provide smaller amounts of money, but it's seed money that'll jumpstart your project, and then you can use that to do some initial shooting and whatever, and then you can come to ITVS for the rest of the money.
And that's Native American Public Television, National Association of.
No, actually, I was thinking. I wonder if Hank can really name all these organizations. That's
no,
really
I
impressive.
I was just going to name one. I was going to have you name the others.
Well, let me just put it this way. There's an organization that serves Pacific Islanders. There's one that serves Native Americans. There's one that serves Asian Americans, African Americans,
sure.
and Latinos.
Right.
And that's how, you know, so those are the ones that were established many years ago. So that's one. That's another strategy, but
sure.
but in reality, you don't have to. If you come to public, if you come to Open Call and you haven't raised any money, you can still come to Open Call, and apply. You don't. It's not required that you have any amount of money in place.
Right. Right.
It's always a good idea to try to get some money in place, but it's not a requirement, and it's not going to, you know, it's not going to be a, it's not going to be held against you, so to speak, you know.
Yet these days, you do have to have a sample reel with, right? So you,
yes.
You have to
well,
have
it, yes.
raise something or been able to get something together.
Yeah, we an open call, we require at least 5 minutes of material of a, of your so-called work in progress. So anything from 5 minutes to a full rough cut, you can submit. And this was instituted a while back when the whole, you know, digital revolution happened, and we were starting to get more and more projects with works in progress. And the field was sort of, you know, it was not a level playing field for people who didn't have works in progress. We decided to make it a blanket requirement. Yeah.
And going along with that, Richard, having 5 minutes of a work in progress plus a sample reel, am I right?
Well, when you say sample, you have to submit a previously completed work. In
That's
other words,
what I mean, yeah.
Yeah, you or your co-applicant have to show us, send something in, and a full, you know, the full program, whether it's 15 minutes or 90 minutes, not selects or a trailer, an example of something that you've done. And this becomes really critical because ITVS, some, you know, we like to say that ITVS funds ideas, good ideas first, meaning that whether you are a 30-year veteran and you've won a gazillion awards, or whether you just graduated from film school, we will consider you, you know, in the call if you have the talent and the imagination to pull it off. But you do have to have something to show for it. So oftentimes, sometimes people who are just starting to work will submit a student film, for example. It doesn't have to have been broadcast. It can be something that maybe played at a short film festival. But so our requirements are actually, when you consider how big the stakes are, our requirements are pretty minimal and fair, and there's no registration fee or anything like that. So it's pretty accessible to anyone who wants to apply.
Yeah, and because there are funding initiatives out there that are for emergent or emerging, I guess, filmmakers rather than beginning filmmakers. But I guess for a beginning filmmaker, if they did come in with the 5 minutes of the work in progress, they could come in with someone who has more experience, who has a prior sample work.
That would be a good strategy. I mean,
yeah.
The thing is that we're, you know, it's oftentimes a roll of the dice, you know, for us, because if we think, boy, they have a really great idea, their work in progress is stellar, they've never really, but on the other hand, they've never really had any experience producing or directing a program for public television, that's not going to keep you from being considered, but it's probably a good idea to beef up your, you know, your chances or increase your chances by adding somebody on your team because we want as much assurance as possible that you're going to be able to, as we say, finish the film, you know, satisfactorily and on budget and, you know, and on time.
Right.
But again, we don't require it. But it's always good to think strategically when you're working with ITVS and trying to figure out how to increase your chances, you know.
Right, because it is so competitive and the quality.
It's very competitive, yeah.
So
yeah.
Getting back to the, because you guys, you know, you fund ideas. Well, then what makes a good idea? And it's talking specifically about the Holy Trinity of.
The Holy Trinity, my favorite topic. Yes, okay. Well, you know,
I thought you'd never ask.
I know, I've been chomping. I think, when are they going to ask me about the Holy Trinity, right? And I hope I'm not offending anybody by using that phrase, because I don't mean to. But I use it in the best sense of, in the spirit of trying to use it to emphasize how important I think it is. You know, over the last 11 years, I have reviewed, 8,000 to 9,000 proposals, okay? And you know, when you review that many proposals, you begin to see certain patterns, you know, in terms of the, you know, what people, the mistakes that people make and why they don't advance in the vetting process. And I've been able to, you know, after a lot of thinking and writing evaluations and telling people no, because I say no a lot, not because I'm a mean person. I'm actually pretty nice, I think. But it's because, you know, their projects fall short of what is considered an ITVS project. But I have reduced it to three basic principles. Okay, are you ready for this? Drum roll, please. Okay. Well, the first thing, and we can talk about each one individually, but there are three things, and I'll just enumerate them, and then we can go back and talk about them. But there are three critical things that form the foundation for a strong treatment. And we're talking about the written treatment, which is really critical. It's the heart of the ITVS proposal. We're not talking about the work in progress. We can talk about that separately. But in terms of the treatment, which is really important, there are three principal things that you want to take into account. And they are premise, theme, and story. Those three things are interconnected. Without one, then the whole enterprise will start to unravel. I can almost guarantee it. And you have to start, you know, so they're all connected. It's like a three-legged stool. If you take one leg off, it's not going to work, right?
Right.
So those are the three big components or elements of a well-written treatment.
So
silence. Okay, I took your breath away, right?
Yes. You're dumbfounded.
You're dumbfounded.
So which would you? I mean, is theme the one that would sort of cohesively tie everything together?
No, wrong, Hank. No, wrong. You don't get the prize. Sorry, Hank.
Okay,
no,
so
no.
Glenn's got a 50-50 chance.
No, actually, yes, exactly. You have to start with a premise. Why? Because the premise, it's like the opening salvo, if you will. It's the first thing that you are alerting or signaling to the evaluator, to the reader, to the staff person, to your peer, saying, I've got a great idea. I want to do a story about the homeless people in Santa Fe. Okay, and so when you say that, you have to. There has to be a little voice in your head saying, "Okay, well, so what? What about the homeless people of Santa Fe?" That question is very critical. Meaning, I have a story to tell you about the homeless of Santa Fe, because 90% of them are artists. Okay, now you're getting my interest. Okay, and guess what? They've created their own community under, you know, interstate, blah blah blah. And they actually, you know, what you're doing is that you start with the subject, okay? Whether it's homeless in Santa Fe or surfers in Long Beach or whatever the topic is, and what you then do in the premise, you delineate the distinctive qualities, the outstanding elements that set your story about the homeless of Santa Fe apart from the rest of the pack. That's the key to a successful premise. It's what one colleague of mine said at Frontline, the angle of vision, that distinct perspective that you're taking on this subject. Because you know, as well as I, that there aren't that many stories out there. But what there is your own unique, distinctive take on that story that's going to grab the reader's attention. And that's very key.
Right.
So the premise, as I wrote to you, sets forth the filmmaker's distinctive angle on the subject being explored. You know, the hook, as they say, as they used to say in vaudeville, right? Not in the bad way, but the hook in terms of what's going to hook the audience in, you know? It establishes, as I wrote, the unique and distinct aspects of a project.
The director's
really important.
Vision. Director's
the director's vision, exactly. Yeah.
Individual vision, yeah.
Yeah. So, any questions, boys and girls?
Oh, we're getting them. Don't worry. We'll get the questions in the later part, probably the last 10 or 15 minutes. We've got a ton of questions coming in. But
a ton. Okay, great.
So on a roll, Richard. You've got a lot to say, and then we'll...
So I guess that would make... Because, you know, there's, like you were saying, there's how many stories are out there that... Like, there's a lot of stories now being done about the environment, for instance, and human's interaction with it.
Yeah.
I guess what would make you stand apart is your premise and your vision. And
oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think that's the first big sort of building block that you establish. And I can tell you right now from my experience of reading thousands and thousands of proposals that the overwhelming majority of the projects, that's the first failure.
Yeah.
Is the premise. Weak premise. I can't tell you how many times I've told that to filmmakers and they go, huh? I said, yeah. As in, what is this story about? And there's a silence on the other end of the line, like, gulp, you know?
Or maybe they have that, but they're just not communicating it strongly enough. I mean, you know, unfortunately, you know, you not only have to be a good filmmaker, but you have to be a really good writer to be able to get these applications through.
Yeah, I mean, well, yes, you do have to know how to put a sentence together. I wouldn't say you have to be like, you know, Philip Roth or something like that. You know, I think what you have to do is you have to understand, you know, what is the story that you are trying to tell? That's the key thing, you know. And we're going to get into this, you know, when we talk about the Trinity. But the premise is the first, you know, the first thing that's linked to that story. And so it's a matter of you tossing and turning and losing sleep and losing your appetite to try to figure out what is it that I'm trying to say about, you know, the environmental thing or homelessness or whatever this is. Even, you know, and it can cover any genre. You know, I just had a discussion with somebody today about biography. Yes, we fund biographies, but we're not going to consider a biography that does it by the numbers, the kind of stuff you might see on cable. And please, I don't have anything against cable, but why should we do the same thing that cable is doing, right, on the biography channel? You know, we want something different, and I think the first indication that you understand that is in the premise. You have to communicate that. It's almost like the, you know, when you do a pitch, and many of you have done the pitch, it's very scary, but you're only given a certain amount of minutes. And so filmmakers have to learn how to concisely and very elegantly synthesize their idea in a few lines or a few minutes. Because I always hear filmmakers say, oh, my story is so complicated, I can't, you know. I said, yes, you can.
Yeah.
Yes, you can.
You have to,
because people are not going to read a 30-page treatment. And they're not going to listen to a half-hour discussion about your project. That's just the reality.
Well, and that's just, I mean, that trickles all the way out or ripples all the way out to the viewer. I mean, your viewer, you're not going to attract eyeballs to your show unless it you know, it has that synopsis that is going to attract people.
Yes, exactly. And we're talking talent. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think everything is connected. Everything is really, it's organic to the medium, right? We're talking about television here. We're not talking about a book or an article in the, you know, in the New York Review of Books, you know. You know, we're not talking about some, you know, treatise that's, you know, it's television. And
right.
It's coming at, there's only so much that an audience can absorb. So you have to take a complex, and many stories are complex, and make them, you know, simplify them. Not simplistic, don't dumb down to the audience, but make them understandable, dynamic, entertaining, and dramatic. You can take your cue from just, you know, looking at movies, you know, when you go to the movies, you know, and look at the way they construct their stories. There's a lot of connection between the fiction genre and the nonfiction genre, as we all know.
Sure.
You know, if you've studied the documentary, you know, filmmakers again and again since the beginning of, you know, Nanook of the North have used so-called fictive elements in telling nonfiction stories, right?
Right.
Yes. And so you have to think that way, but it does start with the premise, you know. So you could try an exercise. Just say, okay, I'm going to make a list of the last 10 movies I saw, which I really liked, and I'm going to reduce it to a premise, okay?
Right.
And it's a good exercise to do, you know, and that'll help you understand, perhaps, another way of helping you understand the significance and the importance of premise.
Yeah, great. That's a great idea. So, number two.
Number two. Okay, here we go. Theme, right? Okay, this is really, really important. This is, to me, theme is really what sets the ITVS documentaries apart from the rest of the crowd. And this is not to say that we're better, but we are different. And I think the thematic framework, if you will, of an ITVS documentary is really important. And this is the best way that I can tell you in very sort of very sort of down to earth terms. You're dealing with a mass audience on public television, some of the largest audiences on television, cable or otherwise, still today, are on public television.
Right.
The fact is that not everybody is interested in the homeless of Santa Fe. You know, maybe
right.
they like Santa Fe for other reasons, and they don't particularly want, you know. So how do you get a lot of people to care about your story? The key is universality.
Right.
And that's where the thematic framework comes in. In other words, the specific story is about the homeless of Santa Fe. The universal story is about, you know, fill in the blank, the big ideas. ITVS is really interested. You know, it's like we have, you know, we broadcast on the small screen, but we have big ideas to convey, to communicate. And that's that's where you try to draw from the specificity of your story and translate it or transform it into something larger that a lot of people will relate to. If they don't care about the homeless in Santa Fe, they will care about these larger ideas that they can relate to. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, and yeah, you've got to make it relevant to each, you know, to every viewer, and that's what the universality aspect
yeah.
does.
And that's actually really tricky because, you know, you need to figure out what are the crossover elements, if you will, to use a music industry term. You know, how can this particular story? Because most stories are local, right? Like politics, right? So it starts at a local, you know, and that's great because that's one of the real values that we get from our independent community is that they're plugged into these communities, you know. They know, they're on the ground, and we trust them to tell us these stories, whether it takes place in Santa Fe or Detroit or wherever. But once you think, you know, you've laid out on the literal plane, the story, then you got to tell us, okay, why would somebody in Seattle care about the homeless in Santa Fe? They've got their own homeless problem. Or somebody in, you know, Missoula, Montana, you know. Then that's where you have to hit that thematic mark. And that is very critical. And that's even in some ways, well, certainly as challenging as setting down a really strong premise.
And really, for you guys, I mean, your mission is to serve, you know, the public television audience. So that's a huge audience. I know that part of the great thing about getting ITVS funding and then hopefully a PBS broadcast is that you reach so many millions of viewers.
Yeah, and the thing is that because we're in the business of broadcasting, then that means that the programs that we support have to have the potential to reach a lot of people, you know, as many people as possible. And you should want that too. You want a lot of people to see your work, you know. And so, and how do you achieve that, you know, and still be true to the specifics of the story? And that's when you have to address within the body of the treatment the larger ideas that you're trying to explore, using the specifics of the story as a vehicle, if you will, to expand on something larger, your larger vision, you know. I mean, think about the classic, getting back to movies, right? You know, just looking at the American movie industry over the last, you know, since the movie industry started back in the, you know, the early part of the 20th century, when you think of the thousands and thousands of movies that have been made by Hollywood, let's talk about Hollywood, only a tiny handful really have survived as classics. It would be interesting to see what are these movies, these classics that have survived that 75 years later or so, we still enjoy them, we still relate to them, even though it's from a bygone era. there are certain things about those movies that speak to us today on some level, on some human level, some sort of existential level, that really is what makes them classic. I personally, you know, while I like Hollywood movies, I'm really taken by Antonioni, for example, the great master Italian director.
Right.
Now, I, you know, I went to Italy once. I don't know Italy. I don't know, you know, I don't know Italy of the 60s that he looked at. Yet, whenever I see La Ventura, I am blown away. Why? Well, you know, look at what he was, you know, what he was trying to address by looking at the characters and the settings and all of that. But you can do it with documentaries. I use movies because movies are so popular and people can quickly reference them. But you can certainly do it with documentaries, the ones that have succeeded and continue to be played again and again and again.
Well, I think that's why the documentary industry is thriving, too, is that more people making documentaries are doing things that are character-driven and story-driven, and they're not just about a subject or a thesis or, you know, an educational look at something. They're really more getting really a lot more nuanced and sophisticated at telling these human stories with these themes, you know,
yes.
Starting... You know, Hoop Dreams is one of them. Crumb, you know, I mean, there's a lot now, but...
I think you're right. And I think that one thing I should say here, though, is that I don't want people, listeners, to think that ITVS dictates the way that you tell a story, because there's been this misconception that we're only interested in so-called character-driven or character-centered documentaries that have a three-act structure, and that's just not true. The fact is that the reason that we fund so many programs like that is because that's what we're getting. That's what filmmakers are choosing. That's the strategy that they're choosing to tell these stories, and that's fine. But we really encourage, in fact, we're doing a teleseminar. I think it's being still put together, but there's a good chance it's going to happen, and we'll let your listeners know through the San Francisco Film Society about the fact that we are encouraging filmmakers to think outside the doc box, as somebody put it, the documentary box, and not just, if it's appropriate, not just tell their story through a three-act character-driven documentary form. It's fine. That, if it works, it works. But that's not the only thing we're about. We want people to be innovative, you know, and try things with a documentary form that are different from that.
So more experimental in nature.
Well, experimental, although I hesitate to use that word because...
How about creative risks? How about that?
Well, you definitely have to take creative... You know, we want you to take creative risks. That's
sure.
Part of the really you have to... We really encourage creative risks. But what does that mean, really? It means that you're willing to take your topic and treat it in a way that's different, that's unexpected, that's non-traditional. And it's risky because it may or may not work, but you have to be able to pull it off. And the key for us is that you can use the word experimental, but at the same time, it also has to be accessible to the audience. We have to, you know, we are serving the audience as well, you know.
So what would be an example of a creative risk that you've seen in a film?
Well, one of the most recent ones, which will be airing next February, which I think was really... quite impressive, is Herskovitz. And Herskovitz is a documentary that was directed by Lou Smith, who is based in Boston. And Herskovitz, that's the name of a scholar, anthropologist from the early part of the 20th century, in the 20s, who Jewish man, who started doing research into the cultural background, from a cultural anthropology background perspective, of African Americans. And anyway, without getting into much detail, people are thinking, wow, that sounds really exciting, you know, yawn. But in fact, what Lou understood and his creative team understood was that this was the exciting thing about this. The single biggest exciting thing about this story were the ideas that created a sea change in people's attitude about African Americans. So what they decided to do, rather than doing a traditional by-the-numbers biography of Herskovitz and his work and all of that, they decided to make it an idea-driven documentary, taking an abstract idea and turning it into a dynamic, visually dramatic documentary. And that's really hard. But they were able to pull it off, and I would encourage your listeners, I was going to say viewers, but your listeners, to tune into Independent Lens next February when Herskovitz will air. But I think that's really, you know, one of the more recent examples of ITV. We don't fund enough. We would like to see more innovative programs, you know, to come to us. We need to fund more of that. But that would be one that is very much on my mind these days.
Yeah. Okay. Great. So the third one, moving on to number three.
Yes.
Is,
well, the third one is story.
Story.
Yes. And, of course, everybody knows that when you come right down to it, we can talk about all these highfalutin ideas about premise and theme and all that. But when you come right down to it, you do need to tell a good story in the most basic sense, and that is television demands drama. People want to be engaged.
Sure.
And you're not going to have, you know, you're not going to accomplish that by having, to use a very obvious example, a string of interviews, right? Sometimes I say, well, if you're going to do that, why don't you just do a radio documentary? I mean, not that I have anything against radio documentaries, but sometimes it's amazing that sometimes people forget in the indie world that television, just like the movies, is a visual medium first and foremost. And you'd be surprised, or maybe not, how often when I'm reading a treatment, there's no visual sense of the story. It's all content, content, content. And it's very, very important that when you're considering story, that you describe, even like a screenplay, the action, the momentum, the narrative momentum of a story. Because if you don't have that, the audience, which is the TV audience, is the toughest audience of all. They're tougher than the ones that attend festivals or go to the movies. And you know why? Because they're not a captured audience. They will, if they're not engaged in those first few minutes, they're going to, you know, do something else or go to another channel or whatever. So it's very, very important for filmmakers to understand that, yes, your story is very important, it's urgent, we understand all of that, your approach, you know, but the important thing is, how are you going to tell this story and meet the demands of television documentary? Television documentaries are a dynamic visual form, and you have to understand that and convey your vision of how you're going to interpret this story from a visual standpoint. And then there are other things to consider. But the main thing is that how are you going to tell a story from beginning, middle to end that's going to hold the audience's attention? And this is another hard part. It's all hard, right? But it's fun too. And that is that when you're writing in the treatment, you have to take us by the hand and say, it's almost like you're saying, okay, I've got a fantastic story to tell you. Just I'm going to take your hand and I'm going to take you on the most incredible journey. This is the way you have to think, you know, and it may sound kind of hokey. Some people may think, oh, boy, Richard is really, you know, he's going a little nutty here.
Those 9,000 submissions are getting to him.
But I can tell you right now that if you don't have a strong story that has a dramatic component to it, it's going to be really hard to get ITVS to get excited about it.
Or anybody, so.
Anybody, exactly, yeah.
I always tell my students, like, be good to your viewers. You know, when they're editing their films or whatever, I'm like, be good to us, you know, like, lead, show us the way and be excited and let us into this world. And I think that's, you know, what you're talking about.
Yes, yeah, and many things. You know, many things go into creating a beautifully rendered story. And we all know what they are. And yet, time and time again, you know, applicants fail to delineate and articulate that in their treatment. They get bogged down with background or why this story is important or here are some of the people I'm going to be interviewing. And I'm going, yeah, okay, we know that you're going to be interviewing this guy and that gal and that whatever. But where's the story?
I think the trick is, too, to integrate the two together, integrate the backstory and the context and the issues that you're going to do into story, into describing them visually.
Exactly. They should be integrated seamlessly.
Yes, exactly.
It's a whole piece, you know. But
it's
that somehow gets
your,
what's that?
It's the written manifestation of the end visual product.
Exactly. And if any of your listeners know anything about treatment from a screenwriter's perspective, people know what a treatment is when you're working in the movies, right? That when a studio or some executive asks for a treatment, you better tell a good story in that treatment. A treatment basically in the feature film world is everything but the dialogue. It's the action of the story.
Sure.
Well, we feel the same way here too, you know. We want people to be not only informed and educated and all those things that are really important, we want them to be, dare I say the word, entertained? Yikes. My God. Like, I don't believe I said that.
Well, that's a great note to take some questions, because we are actually careening towards the end of our call. We really only have about 10 more minutes. So it's hard
oh, dear. Where did the time go?
I don't know. So we've got questions from Annapolis to Sausalito, all over the place, and I'll just pick a few out here, which we hopefully haven't covered yet. Here's a good one from Tony in Albuquerque. Is there anyone at ITVS you can call to see if a particular project qualifies under their mission?
Well, yeah, you can call me.
Wonderful. What's
yeah.
your phone number?
It's on the website.
ITVS.org,
yes.
Okay, so you can call Richard. That's an amazing, generous offer, Richard. Thank you for that. Okay, here's another one. If ITVS, this is from Bess in New York. If ITVS funds the film, is it possible to do the film festival circuit before the doc airs on public television?
Yes.
Yes, okay.
Yes, short one. Yes,
And if you get ITVS funding, you work very closely with ITVS about how your film's going to roll out into the world. So that's sort of, you know, don't worry about it. And ITVS puts a lot of great outreach into each
right.
film.
You know, once you're contracted to make the documentary, we work with you in, and we don't play the role of executive producer. That's one of the beauties of ITVS, is that we really support you in your vision, but we don't tell you how to make the film. But you do deliver cuts, you know, assemblies and rough cuts and fine cuts and all that, and we give you feedback, which is very valuable. And you use that feedback to craft your documentary. And then as you're getting closer to finishing it, then we start talking about a distribution plan. Like, let's say, well, I really want my documentary to air on Independent Lens, and you know, Independent Lens is produced by ITVS, so we can help you with that and show it to them, or you want it on POV. And so we work with the distribution. And then in terms of community outreach, that's determined, in terms of ITVS, it's determined on, you know, where it's going to air, because we do have a very, you know, excellent community outreach, but only certain programs are selected for community cinema, community outreach campaigns.
Right, good. And just in terms of you guys giving feedback, I just want to let everyone know, too, that even if you submit to Open Call and you are rejected the first time or second or third, I mean, we applied 4 times for Shakespeare Behind Bars before we finally got it, but each time you're rejected, ITVS does this wonderful thing, which is you can set up a phone call and get feedback from the reader group who reviewed your proposal, and many, many times that feedback has really helped us strengthen our proposal for the next time we've submitted. And
that's a very valuable service. You know,
yeah.
It's so probably the most important service we offer, aside from the contract. But because it's so competitive, a lot of people don't get the contract, but they can have, you know, for the most part, get access to feedback, which is can be very valuable.
Yeah,
I think one thing that we've actually, you know, we've talked about the sample reels and and the work in progress, and we've talked about the treatment itself, but we haven't talked about budget, and that is a part of the ITBS proposal, right?
Well, initially, it's just a brief summary. It's basically saying, you know, how much have you raised, if any? Do you have any pending funds, and how much do you need at this stage to finish the film? So,
right.
But as you move up the ladder, so
along,
to speak,
that becomes more and more.
Then they ask you more specific questions,
right.
and you know, this is a professional endeavor. This is, you know, this is prime time, you know, and so you have to really know what you're doing in terms of budgeting a documentary for public television. So,
good.
Yeah, it's important.
I have another question here from Kelly in Sausalito. It's an interesting one. It says, please tell us how you consider stories that may have more risque elements and contain some crude language, but only in service of the disabled person's story in the case of our film.
Well, you know, I think that you have to understand because, you know, it is public television, they have very strict rules, and some of it has to do with the FCC and some of it has to do with PBS standards, but you know, they do have a list, PBS does, of what they call flaggable, you know, items, and language is one of them, you know. So, you know, we want you to be true to your story, to have an authentic voice, but you also have to be mindful that because it's public TV, you know, some of that stuff may have to be edited out or, you know, whatever. But, you know, we'll work with you on that, you know, but you still have to be mindful that you're working for public television. You know, it's different with cable, you know, because they're not ruled by FCC regulations. But as you know, FCC in recent years has gotten very tough about that.
Right. Here's another question. Would ITVS consider a program of historical nature with an archaeological aspect to it?
Well, I guess the short answer to that is yes, why not? You know, it just,
yeah,
that's so
sure.
Broad in general that it would be hard. I mean, we fund documentaries of all genres. You know, we fund historical, obviously we fund contemporary stories, we fund personal stories. It runs the gamut. You know, if you look at our catalog, if you go to our website, you will see the array of stories that we have funded over the last, 20 years.
Good. Here's a question from Mabel in San Francisco. What makes a successful work in progress? Do characters' arc and narrative structure need to be in place in addition to the themes the film explores? Do you also look for a hook at the end of the rough cut?
Well, you know, when you talk about a work in progress, that's a general term. And a work in progress can mean, as I said earlier, anything from 5-minute fundraising trailer, something longer with unedited, you know, select scenes, to a full rough cut. It just depends on, it's very hard to give a general answer about what makes a good work in progress. The short answer is, whatever stage you are in production, let's say you've only been in production a month, well, clearly you're probably not going to have that much to show in terms of work in progress. The important thing is to consider what you've written in the treatment. For example, if your story, the linchpin of your story is one character, you know, and it's going to follow this character through the whole, you know, with other secondary characters, then obviously in the work in progress, you're going to want to see this character, how they come across on TV, you know, and all that. So that would be the thing, is that the work in progress, for the most part, augments or supports the treatment. But it's the treatment, the written treatment, in which you write about the finished film. The best thing that somebody can say about a well-written treatment, I've said time and again, is that this treatment is so good, I can see the finished film. I can see what the director sees.